Yeah, that's not such a cheery song, is it? It's called Don't Marry the One You Love by Laura Jean. Well, I suppose some of the greatest stories that we read, the ones we value, are actually love stories, aren't they? There's Romeo and Juliet and Anna Karenina and Gone with the Wind and what's another one? Jane Eyre. The list just goes on and on and on. Love stories are about the stuff of life. And there's a new collection called Australian Love Stories, which is all about love in all its guises. And I'm joined by Lisa Jacobson, who wrote one of the stories. She's in our Melbourne studio. Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
And up on the farm is Kate Kennedy. Hi, Kate.
How are you, Michael?
I'm terribly well. You're the editor of this collection. Now, this is a very bracing and stormy read. There's passion on one page and bitter breakups on the other. And I thought it was all going to be sort of romance, but it's a kind of adventure in the wilds of life, Kate.
It was. And I found much the same thing selecting for the collection, because I received like 440-odd stories, and I found the same thing. I was expecting we were going to have some lovely kind of anecdotal love stories and everything working out in the end, but of course people's lives are complex, and their experiences of love are so complex, and so there is, as you said, passion on every page. There's wildly falling in love and being infatuated, and there's the loss of love, and there's betrayal, and there's kind of coming to a new stage of wisdom. There's the whole gamut of the human condition in here.
Yes, it could have called Love and Not Love, really. But
I think probably your song at the beginning of the segment was actually quite accurate.
Yes, it captured the paradox, the dialectic. The dialectic at the heart of your work. Now, because you and I are chums, I know where you've been for the last year. You have been on the island of Vanuatu.
I have been living in the island of Santo in Vanuatu, so you'd think it'd be a perfect kind of romantic, tropical getaway in which to kind of read a whole pile of love stories and be in the right frame of mind to create something, you know, that's a wonderful, as you said, a wonderful kind of sweetness and light. But in fact, Just as the collection reflects the kind of storminess and the agony and the ecstasy, I found the same thing. As I was reading these stories, we experienced Cyclone Lucy, in fact.
So you were being buffeted, as they always say.
We were being buffeted. In fact, the cyclone is just the favour of turning around and did a 360 around our island and ran back over us again.
Ah.
So we had a house full of refugees and many lovely stories being told in my very own house as I was sitting up at night reading these stories by my own little lamplight, thinking, which ones am I possibly going to choose?
Perhaps it was a literary cyclone. It wanted to come back and have another look.
Blow away a few more pages for me, that's right.
So how did this happen? I mean, here's this, you know, beautiful little book that you've edited. You started with hundreds of stories. How do you attract hundreds of stories? Do you put a call out? Do people post them to you? How does this all work?
Well, it was done through this wonderful small publishing house, Inkerman and Blunt, and we did put a call out for stories. The year before, there had been a beautiful book coming out called Australian Love Poems that Mark Tredinnick edited, and it was a beautiful collection. It was a wonderful thing to have, and much the same kind of idea. The thematic links through the book were really satisfying. There was all sorts of aspects and kind of different ways of looking at love through poetry. And so Donna Ward, the publisher of Inkerman & Blunt, said, I love this so much, I want to do stories now. And so she asked me if I would consider selecting and editing the stories, and I said, yes, I would. And as it turned out, I wouldn't be in the country, I'd be away, but we worked that out, and she sent the stories up to me, and they arrived in a big box, and so I did them there. So it's a winnowing down process of thinking, you know, it's not so much even which ones are the best, although the ones that move you, of course, are always the ones that I consider are the best ones, the ones that are the most effective and really pack a punch in some way and really have that ache.
Yeah, yeah.
That's human experience, of course.
You've absolutely got that. I mean, I had no idea that this was going to be such a sort of bracing and muscular read, but it really is. It's going to be a fantastic Christmas book. Anyway, let's have a chat to two of the contributors. We're also joined by Irma Gold, who's in Canberra. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us. And as I say, Lisa Jacobson is in the Melbourne studios. Did we say good morning?
Good morning, Irma. Hi, Kate.
Hello, how are you, Lisa?
Good, thank you.
Irma, let's start with you, because what's weird about Lisa and Irma, well, no, there's nothing weird about you, you're both marvellous people, but what's weird about the work you've written is that they're both stories about the end of love. They're not cheery stories.
I know, we're the Grinches of the end.
You are, perfect for Christmas. So, Irma, your one is fantastic, because and they're both good. It's the story of a breakup. A woman with two children gets fed up after her husband throws out their collection of old plastic bags. That's just doesn't. And it's so like, not that there are domestic arguments at our house, but domestic arguments that I've heard about at other people's houses can be triggered by just such an act of thoughtlessness.
And can I just say, Emma, oh my God, the plastic bags.
Yes, I mean, it's these things that are the kind of disputes in relationships, aren't they? And in my story, it's the tipping point, basically. You know, what I hope the reader feels is the weight of all that's gone before. So they have this terrible argument over plastic bags, but of course it's not really about plastic bags.
So the husband has thrown out the plastic bags.
Yes, yes, he's thrown them all out and she uses them for the bin liners.
Mm. And actually, they're not all plastic bags. I mean, one of them is a bag that she paid $30 for. It's one of
That's
those.
Right. She goes to great effort to write a list to show him all of the things that he has thrown out that yes. she was so carefully keeping.
So really it's about love unravelling. What was the imaginative trigger for this? What were you thinking as you put this story together?
Yeah, it's funny. The first line actually just came to me about the plastic bags. And when I write stories, I never quite know actually where they're going. So it's almost like I'm discovering it as I go. And and that was the first line that came to me, and it all just kind of unfurled from there. And it was also, I mean, Easter comes into the story as well. It was after Christmas, but I mean, Easter stuff is on the shelves now, straight after Christmas. And all of that was happening in the shop. So that kind of triggered it, part of it too.
What I really loved, Emma, about that too, was the way that the story seemed to be brimming with anger, that complexity of love as well, that there was so much, so many layers of different things that were going on in that story. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. I'm so pleased you got that from it. I mean, I think one of the things you really hope with a short story is that people feel it's a fragment of a much bigger world, so that you're arriving on the page, but so much has happened before and so much will happen after the reader finishes those last words.
And Emma, we can all relate to the thing of suddenly realising, oh, damn, it's Easter and I haven't bought any Easter eggs. Oh. And you go to the supermarket and only the really crappy eggs are left. So you just buy lots of them.
Yeah, yeah, as many as you can. I freaked myself out writing this story because I think it might have only been, you know, January or something, but I went out and I bought so many Easter eggs for my kids, so they had them months in advance, so I wasn't like my character.
You've stockpiled, or have they eaten them all?
No, it's past now. They ate them all, everyone.
No, that's not a solution. You can't get them to eat the Easter eggs prematurely. When Easter comes, they'll still want more eggs.
No, this was last Easter when I was writing the story, so I didn't want to be like my character, so I bought them all in advance so they didn't end up with those kind of cardboard home brand eggs.
Now, Lisa Jacobson, your story is the next phase. Your two have well and truly broken up. So the woman who doesn't have a name, does she?
She doesn't have a name.
I thought perhaps suddenly I hadn't paid attention.
No.
She doesn't have a name.
Do
she says to a friend, I think it is, or to a sister, she says, I'm not ready for love, I just want sex.
Yes, she does. But then I'm thinking, as you say that love and sex are very intertwined. And I think one of the things that we do in our contemporary conversation is we collapse love into the single definition of romance, when actually it's many layered. It's I think that if we say we're looking for sex, we're often think we're looking for sex, but we're actually looking for love. And of course it falls short, and then we have a yearning. So, I mean, in ancient Greek, they had four words for love. So there was agape, which was spiritual love, and eros, which was sexual, erotic love, and philia, which was love for family. So sex holds a lot. It doesn't just hold sex. It holds a whole want for the things that aren't there.
Well, it does in this woman's case, I guess, but she puts an
ad. Don't be fooled, Michael. I think that word holds. It's very weighty.
What am I being fooled by, do you think?
Well, I think that when we see those ads in the paper, you know, and if you look at them, there are realms of them with social media and Twitter, and it's very easy now to flip out a line saying I want sex. But I think if you actually play that out, it's not actually about sex. It's about loneliness, and it's about desire, and it's about want, and it's sometimes just about wanting to be held. It's about skin hunger, as I say in my story. And so that the ad about sex is one thing, but the actual meeting, when you do that kind of thing, holds so much more and has so much complexity to it.
Yeah, so your character puts an ad in the paper and online that says, attractive single mother seeks casual encounters for discreet fun times.
Sounds good, huh? Sounds great.
Oh, I don't know whether it does or not. I mean, you see, when I've seen those, I've never thought, oi, 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 oi. I've always thought, oh, that's actually someone who's prostitute, and it's a cover for someone who's doing it for money. That's what I've always assumed, but perhaps not.
No, I don't. Do you think know so. Different? I just think that I don't think that's the case. I think that working girls have a great network of ways of getting their work, but I think that there's a lot of lonely people out there.
Yeah, there are. So this could have been the setup for a horror story. I mean, she puts out the ad saying, I'm up for it, and gosh knows who would come.
Absolutely.
But actually, the story ends with redemption. Was that important to you?
It is, and it is really important. I really like to take readers down into the depths, but I like to lead them out. And I know when I'm reading myself that I don't like to be left somewhere there, but I do like to go down to make that sort of, as we say, the 15-inch drop from the head to the heart. But redemption is really important for me, and so it does end on a redemptive note of love.
Oh, Kate Kennedy, that's a good line. The 15-inch drop from the head to the heart.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
And
I have to say,
through
these two stories, listening to the authors talk about them is so fascinating because, of course, I read all the stories blind. I didn't know authors' names. I just read them all just anonymously. And both of these stories seem to me to do an amazing thing of taking the small, ordinary little everyday detail that we all recognise immediately, you know, the throwing out of the plastic bags is the thing that breaks the camel's back. Or at the beginning of Lisa's story, I remember there's the woman's berating herself for getting up early to watch the Wiggles with her little daughter and finding them strangely attractive, you know.
Have you seen Captain Feathersword? You should.
Details that everyone's going to go, yes, I have been there too. And yet, in those everyday details, they really plumb these very deep things. As the story progresses, they do get to the absolute heart, from the head to the heart, as you said, of what really matters. We look at what's come before and what has to come afterwards now because of this one small frame. And that's what a beautiful short story does, is give us one little framing device that says, this is your little glimpse into this world that's going to show you how it's been and how it came to this. And now what is the way out of this for this character? What's going to happen next? It's a really beautiful, skillful thing to do, and both of them do look at those incredibly important aspects of love and life and loss and the hunger for intimacy that sometimes isn't there. We need to go out and try and find it for ourselves.
I think just to add to that with Irma's story too, when I read it, I thought a lot of these stories and Irma's in particular is about this is not what love is. So the anthology is as much about authors exploring what love is as what love isn't. And I think Irma's story does that very well.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the anthology actually poses that question as a whole, you know, what actually is love and what do we think it is and do we even know?
One thing I was thinking about as I was reading, gosh, there are male stories here and female stories here, all addressing the place where men and women meet. I wonder whether there is a difference. I was trying to think it through, but I couldn't quite nail it.
That could be the next anthology.
Yeah, there you go, Kate. You'll have to go back to the islands.
I will.
Gee, that'll be a tough job.
Season two. It's all going to be the same now.
Thank you, ladies, for joining me this morning, and Merry Christmas to you all.
Merry Christmas. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful collection. So we've been speaking to Irma Gold, who's a writer and editor, and she's the author of children's books and short stories, and she's contributed to this collection, and also Lisa Jacobson, who's an award-winning Aussie poet and fiction writer, and she writes essays and things. Her verse novel, South in the World.
Poetry collection.
Oh, yes, the poetry collection was shortlisted for lots of prizes.
And, that's the best novel.
Oh, I don't know. She's won prizes, has Lisa. And Kate Kennedy is a major writer of Australian fiction. She's the editor of the book we've been discussing this morning. It's called Australian Love Stories, and it's published by Inkerman and Blunt.